Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
A Good Ball by Eugene Bacon, with music by Fall Precautions, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. The game is alive, coughed the score worm. It illuminated with body shimmers who was winning. It was the Cyclops. The amphitheater erupted. An umpire blew his horn and the third quarter of the ball game started. The way the game played was by each group of 10 players dodging a ball that was a human skull hurled by the opposing team. Ware had nearly leveled the boned shape to a smooth oval. When it struck a victim, they were banished to the sin bin, sometimes for eons, unless a release deal was struck by song delivered in prose poetry. The first quarter had seen the Troika lose a trinity of players and one third. A third because the precocious fullback was only an albino child. What was her past? Her future? Where had she come from? During the break, the Troika had put a valiant effort to rescue their trinity, if not the one-third. Their lead siren, a third eye for the nose and fur all over her three bodies, understood the value of a trio. She sang in light waves that accelerated in orthodox lines across the one end of the amphitheater to the other and found refraction in the audience. Resonance jumped between bodies. Patterns and frequency emitted a synchronous melody. Earth stories oblivious to time and space are not our element. Like the boy whose eyes are palpitant, swollen with poems after phantoms floating in song line. They flow in monochrome, infographics that cascade into the working sea of his creed. A magnificent white bird, yellow-beaked, supplicates on bended knee. Its droppings are full of calligraphy. Text ricochet from bird poop, hopping and skipping in telescopic trails of full stops, semicolons and em dashes, no adjectives. At the end of the tune, the score worm coughs and announces the verdict. Your song was not quick to transition between notes. It lacked a depiction of diversity. The Cyclops were deft with the ball in the second quarter, but the Troika, a trinity, and one-third down, put a brave effort, dodging the skull until the horn went. The lead Troika siren put on a show, oscillating waves that cartwheeled in red and blue to generate diversity in her sung prose poetry. She sees a garden of commas. There's a curl on the crown. The sky is the color of cookies. But a pessimist would say it's the hue of sizzling bile. They're frost in the gully, the kind of ice that doesn't drench thirst. And as she walks where punctuation is no taboo, she'll lace her boots and forget to set expectations. But the home crowd heckled. Again, the score worm delivered a verdict. Things continued in pitiful fashion for the Troika in the third quarter, but when the faltering team siren sang an EM spectrum that vomited gammas and infrared, the crowd listened. A soar of mercury, a heavy, silvery metallic element, dries out stones until they burst to flame and scald the scorched earth. No geometry on her face, just a purity of creation that's also obliteration. No foreshadow, just metaphors, where a parliament of owls elects a blonde fox to lead a charm of finches soaring to a spirit that's always here. But the fox is really a dog that came from the clouds beyond the epicenter of the city by the bay. It is an animal incapable of loving, but thrives on heat, ready to mate, in an imaginary place where one day sooner, not Mother Nature, has the final say. "This is a serious quest," shimmered the scoreworm. "I searched the term to describe your song. And half a century and 10,000 lives after, I still know its great story. If the Cyclops have no challenge, we have a challenge. Let's hear it then." The Cyclops singer was both ugly and beautiful. The blob of her face wore teeny eyes and a tubular nose that oozed blubber on the sulk of her lips. The softness of her fur reminded one of the Betelgeuse star in its brightness and beauty. Her light was eye candy from space, a panorama that flowed like spice to quench the remotest need. Her song? "At root we are leaders, helpers, destroyers. At the start of evolution, it was never on that we'd check boxes to interrogate an internal question whose answer stalls in a weightless black hole. As we search beyond the moon for what's left of an endless rain, a frenetic river smears fate into the night. The riverbed is a shadow whose shape is alternate art. It performs a hip-hop ballet that runs out of pirouettes. Our ancestors' dream never looked like missing, but we're the wick and they are the flame. Together we burn, encapsulated in a dimension that's as unsightly as it is divine in this inverted world. You blink, and it's there. Then it slips into a whisper of silence. Did you see?" The amphitheater cheered in trinkles, distracted by the blob and blotch snailing down the singer's face and sliming the echoes of her prose. "It's a brave intercept," coughed the scoreworm, "but it's dislocated to pose a decent challenge. This means the Troika 1/3 is released from the sin bin." Much was at stake in the final play. The precocious child on the Troika side made a grab for the skull and knocked down two Cyclops. It worked angles, pushing and shoving. Suddenly another player on the ground. It was a Cyclop, dislocated joint. Nearly matched though, the game quickly degenerated into a bloodbath. Players slipped on gelatinous fluid, an earnest struggle for the last one standing. By sheer luck, not effort, a body bang severed a Troika's jaw, and she retired injured. It was the lead singer. Unlikely the song would rescue the Trinity. All understood they were condemned to the sin bin for eternity. But duty demanded righteousness in the scoreworm. One last call. "If the Troika have no challenge, we have a challenge. Let's hear it then." The precocious child stepped forward, her head, unrecovered from birth, perhaps the premise of her abandonment, was bald and wrapped with unpigmented skin. Her deep, deep eyes, tan, studied the crowd. She shifted from one leg to another, took a breath. Her song generated weather. The amphitheater lit with two suns. The shadow on the wall is an unquiet memory of home ground, choked with cosmic dreams of refugees who crossed lands, traveled wars and chants of shadow and light, only to find a wall of absence. How confusing their entanglement in the imperfect story of a better life that's a syncopation of deleted riffs. Endless echoes of shadows in repetition, migration, indifference, passports, ruined. The crowd, silent, looked at child. As the two suns dimmed, there was a bellow. "Encore! Encore!" "We were quick to transition," coughed the scoreworm. "As we evolved past lesser beings to our higher states, sometimes we do what we must, as unsavory as it may be, to balance the universe. But the human story this child tells is one that needs us the most. A child has reminded us of it. We've seen a good ball. The verdict is a draw. Release the full Troika Trinity from the sin bin." Shards of Glass by Todd Sullivan, with music by Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. The temperature had dropped to minus 10 Fahrenheit when Cal said, "We should take a left here." The narrow streets twisting through the blocks around Haeundae Beach had confused them since they'd checked into the Starlight Hotel that afternoon. Galbi, Suju, and three Western-style bars later, they shivered in the late night, stumbling down blue-coated streets that all looked slightly, but not nearly different enough. Pablo clutched his phone in freezing fingers. "The internet in Busan is shit." He held it over his head as if it would increase the signal. "I can't get a fix on our location." "I'm sure we can find our way." Cal paused, considering where they should go next. The neon signs and alleys between buildings in the tourist district seemed like they could potentially all lead back to the hotel. He checked his phone again, but the loading circle in the app was continually revolving. Hard to imagine once upon a time people navigated their way around without Google Maps. "If we find an open store, we need to ask for directions." Pablo wrapped his arms around his body. They'd left the hotel in light jackets, sacrificing warmth for style. The night and the wind blowing off the beach had significantly reduced temperatures. As they searched for a route to the warm enclaves of their rooms, both regretted their fashion choices. "Won't help us if they don't speak English." Cal looked around. They were foreigners in a foreign country, lost in the middle of winter with no easy means of communication. "Come on." He grabbed Pablo's arm. They rounded a corner and jerked to an abrupt stop in front of a spherical, opaque rift occupying space before them. "Fuck." Pablo pounced back and spun simultaneously. Tripping on his feet, he slammed headfirst into a brick wall to his right. Cal stood motionless, heart racing faster than could possibly be healthy. A sense of vertigo washed over him and left his head spinning. Flickers of light punctuated the dark space, and where a moment ago there was none, a woman appeared. She wore a sari and wildly gesticulated, a string of words that neither Cal nor Pablo understood streaming from her mouth. She stood on a muddy path in a light rain. Tall, leafy green trees rose up on both sides of her. The woman wasn't alone. Two young kids, a boy and a girl, stood in front of her and stared wide-eyed ahead of them. "What the fuck?" Pablo cursed, his voice nasally. Cal glanced over his shoulder and saw his friend holding his nose, blood seeping between his fingers. Cal's heart still pounded, but the vertigo had passed. He stepped towards the sphere. A sudden breeze sent droplets of water to splatter the blue ground of Busan. The kids seemed so close. The woman's face twisted with fear as she screamed something to the children. The boy turned to her, but the girl kept staring directly into Cal's eyes. "They can see us too," he said in realization. He stepped closer, saw the air around the sphere becoming misty as the humidity of the forest collided with the cold of Busan. Cal reached out to the sphere. The sudden sound of heavy footsteps preceded Pablo clutching Cal's wrist in bloody fingers and spinning him around. "You can't be serious," Pablo yelled at him. "Calm down," Cal said, pushing Pablo away. "We don't even know what it is." "That's the point." Bright red blood streaked Pablo's lips and chin. "We have no idea what it is, and you want to go near it?" Cal turned to see that the woman was now holding on to the two children, who squirmed in her grasp. The sharp chirping of birds and a thick, earthy smell emanated from the sphere. The girl wriggled in the woman's arms, freeing herself, and stumbled forward. Cal instinctively extended his hand, only to be halted by Pablo's bloody grasp gripping him again. I can't stand here and let you do this. You don't know what it is or what it can do. It's a mirror in the forest, Cal said, as a viral clip he'd seen on social media surfaced in his thoughts. A smartphone given to people 1,000 years ago. He took his own from his pocket and saw the tiny circle still spun. Whatever this rift was, it must be affecting the satellite signal. I need to touch it, Cal said. I need to show them I'm not afraid. Them? Pablo looked around, blood dripping from his nose to plop onto the blue-coated concrete. Who do you think sent this to us? Cal shook his head. He had no idea who or what dropped this tech in the winding alleys of this urban jungle. He freed himself from Pablo's sticky grasp, and when his friend tried to catch him again, he waved him off. Think about it, Pablo pointed at the sphere. What is harmless for them might be toxic to us. The mirror in the forest? I saw the clip too. Big cats hissing, gorillas banging their chests. But imagine if one of them had broken their reflection. We'd know to be careful around shards of glass, but a dumb animal may not. Maybe whatever sent this to us may think it's nothing but a scientific experiment. But that doesn't mean things can't go wrong. Touch that, and you'll never know what the unintended consequences could be. Cal caught the girl's eye again, saw the curiosity burning in her gaze. Though he wanted to broach the perimeter of the sphere, Pablo's warning penetrated his consciousness. He motioned the girl off, pointing behind her to the frightened woman. He hated to admit it, but Pablo was right. A shard of glass could cut a major artery. Cal could only guess what danger the sphere might possess. The determination in the girl's face remained, however. With a deep breath, she stepped into the unknown. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard A Good Ball by Eugene Bacon, with music by Fall Precautions, and Shards of Glass by Todd Sullivan, with music by Fog Machine. Theme music by Dane Lescombe. Come visit us at our bookstore in Joshua Tree, or online at spacecowboybooks.com. Don't forget to subscribe, and visit us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.